everyone, it's Lacey Scholes from VH1's Rock of Love, and this is Talk of Love, the new podcast. This isn't just reality, this is real life.
Hey everybody, what's up? It's Lacey motherfucking Scholes, and this is episode 20 of the Talk of Love podcast. How are you guys? So I want to spend a few minutes today talking about activism. So there's a lot of craziness going on right now. And I think it is important to be involved. It's going to take all of us and all of our efforts for positive change to happen. And I think that a lot of people don't have a crystal clear idea of what exactly activism is. So I just want to get into that a little bit and let all of you know that all of you can be activists as well. It's not this crazy foreign word. It's not a crazy foreign activity. It's something that we can all do, and it can be for whatever it is that you feel passionate about. So, you know, I think a lot of people think of activism as being this crazy, like, take your bra off, burn your bra, set stuff on fire. And that's not necessarily what activism is. That's more of like Tuesday night at Lacey's house. But yeah, activism is, I will say, okay, so sorry, let me preface this by saying I have been involved in activism since I was about 18 years old. And as you guys know, I've said 1,000 times, I started out with animal rights, and I learned so much about activism through animal rights related issues that I have then been able to apply the actions of activism and apply it to other plights as well, whether it has to do with equality or the Me Too movement or what have you, the environment. There's all kinds of things that involve a movement to make positive change happen. So what is activism? Activism really boils down to educating yourself, raising awareness or educating those around you, and a call to action. So there's a whole way of different, there's a spectrum of how you can go about doing this. And there is no right or wrong way. But on one end of the spectrum, there is a very passive way of educating. Like, a lot of people will look at a group like Greenpeace, who's more all about observing and documenting things that take place and then letting people know. And then on the other end of the spectrum, there's like PETA, where they like are throwing paint on people. So there's all different ways of doing activism. There's one extreme, there's the other. I personally think that all of it is necessary. I don't think if you do it all one way or all the other way will either be effective alone. I think it is really about doing it in every possible way imaginable in order to make waves, in order to make change happen, and in order to get people's attention. Because sometimes you won't get people's attention unless something extreme is done. And sometimes that's what it takes. Other times that's not as necessary. But I will say that when it comes to educating yourself, here's a reason that that's important. I'm going to tell you a story of something that happened to me on why being educated about this kind of stuff is important. I'm going to talk about civil rights. So when I was in my 20s, I was with a guy named Chris for 8.5 years. He was my boyfriend, and he was the my guitar player for my old band, Nocturne. In fact, I'm actually still friends with Chris, and he's got an awesome wife, and Chris is friends with my current husband, Johnny, which sucks for me because the two of them usually get together and totally gang up on me, which is not okay, but that's a conversation for another day. So, no, I'm just teasing. Chris is awesome, and he is the first person ever that taught me about the ACLU, which is the American Civil Liberties Union, and he used to get their stuff in the mail from them. And he would always read up about the ACLU. I never understood why he was so into that. And he would always tell me, like, civil liberties, really important. Everybody should have an education on civil liberties. So then there was one year where we were going on tour, and we were not yet in a tour bus. We were in the stage of our career where we were renting an RV and pulling a U-Haul trailer, driving all over the country. And so Chris told me, listen, because we're driving our own vehicle all over the freaking country, that increases the likelihood that we might get pulled over. He goes, if we get pulled over, and I'm usually the one who drives, he said, if we get pulled over, whatever you do, don't ever let a cop search the RV or the trailer, because the problem is a lot of times they will just take everything out. They will rip everything to pieces, break stuff, in search of whatever they think that you might have, and it will cost us money. It'll break our gear. I mean, we literally had thousands and thousands of dollars of worth of like synthesizers and guitar amps and like all kinds of stuff that we needed in order to do these shows. We were on tour, you know, doing these shows. So we can't have our equipment strewn across the highway, you know, being broken apart by cops looking for drugs. So he told me that unless a police officer has probable cause, he cannot search your vehicle unless he has a warrant. And if the police officer is asking you to, if he can search your vehicle, that means he doesn't have probable cause. That means he doesn't have a warrant, and you have a right to tell him no. And so I'm like, that sounds scary as shit. Like, I don't want to tell no to a cop, you know? And he's like, trust me, all of our shit will be destroyed. You can kiss the tour goodbye if we get searched and have all of our shit gone through. So I'm like, all right. And so he said, here's another thing. A lot of times they will try to disguise the way they get permission from you. They want to say, hi, is it okay? Do I have your permission to search your vehicle? They'll usually like, I'm going to search your vehicle, okay? And they disguise it. So you think it's a command, but actually it's a question. So he's telling me all this and it's like, I'm half listening to it. I'm not really taking it seriously. I don't really think this is going to be applicable. And sure enough, it was like he had a crystal ball. Sure enough, we went on tour and that exact situation happened. So we were in our RV. I was exhausted. I was in the back asleep, even though normally I'm the one that drives. And our drummer, who is a horrible driver, was driving the RV as we were sleeping in the back. So I was woken up because I could feel the RV pulling over and stopping. And I didn't think that we were at our destination yet. So I was like, why are we stopping? And my drummer is like, we're being pulled over. I'm like, God damn it. So I was like, well, let me handle it because I'm a girl. And usually girls have an easier time with cops. And also the RV was under my name. So I was just like, you know, in my shorts and sleeping outfit. I just threw some like slippers on, hair's a mess, you know, and I look like a, you know, for a the perspective of a police officer, I've got this crazy red hair, you know, so God only knows what assumptions are making. So we get pulled over. I step out of the RV and immediately he starts asking like, what are you guys doing? Where are you going? All this. I told him that we're in a rock band and we're on tour. So he was like, you're in a rock band, huh? And I was like, yes. And he's like, do you have any drugs on the RV? Of course, that was like the first go-to. And I said, no, officer, do not have any drugs. And literally it was like my guitar player predicted. He was like, well, I'm gonna have to search your RV, okay? And I was like, fuck. And I said, I'm very sorry, officer. No disrespect intended. I cannot allow you to search the RV. And he sort of was like, what? Like you could tell he was sort of surprised by my answer. So he said, well, I'm just saying, you know, you guys are out here and I don't know what's going on, what you're doing. And if you're really like going where you're saying you're going. And all I know is like, I'm just going to have to search your RV. Okay. And he said it again. So I just repeated myself. Again, I said, I'm really sorry, officer. I cannot allow you to search the RV. No disrespect intended. And this went on and he was like getting more and more frustrated with me. Finally, he says, get in the back of the cop car. And I was like, oh my God. So I get in the back of the cop car. He's got my driver's license. He's going over everything with me sitting in the car with him, which I found to be unusual. So I was fucking scared to death. My heart was racing. I was sweating. I'm like, I hope to God that my guitar player was right about this goddamn ACLU bullshit. Because if he's wrong and my ass gets arrested because I'm arguing with the cop, I'm going to have to kill him and then I'll go to jail again. So I was just scared to death. But I had faith in what he was saying because I knew he read all of the ACLU stuff like religiously. So the cop was like, you know, you seem really nervous. Why are you nervous? And I was like, well, because I'm sitting in a cop car. Like, I think anybody would be nervous in my situation. And then he said, well, here's the thing. If you don't let me search your RV, then I'm going to have to bring the drug dogs. They're going to come. And if they smell anything, even from outside of your RV, if they smell anything, that will give us the right to go in and search your RV. So I'm going to ask you one more time. Can I search your RV? And I said, I'm really sorry, officer. I cannot allow you to search the RV. And he's like, well, I'm gonna have to bring the drug dogs in. And I'm like, if that's what you need to do, then that's what you need to do. But no disrespect. I'm very sorry, officer. I cannot allow you to search the RV. So I kept saying this over and over and over for 45 minutes, you guys, 45 minutes. I was sitting in that cop car with my heart racing. And he was like going through all the records. He had my driver's license. He was looking me up, trying to see if there was any warrants or anything else. So finally, after what felt like an eternity, he said, okay, you're free to go. And he let me go and he let us go. No ticket, no nothing. And I was in shock and disbelief. And so I went back on the RV and we started to drive away. And my band members were looking at me like, what the fuck was going on? Why were you gone for so long? So I told them the whole story. And the bottom line is that my guitar player was 100% right, that I had the right to tell him, no, you cannot search my RV. You cannot have all of my synthesizer and band gear like all strewn across the highway being ripped apart. He was 100% right. And so it was having that education, knowing your rights, you know, that was really important. And that really saved us that day and really saved our tour. So now, trust me, I completely understand there's other factors involved. The fact that I'm a female and not a male, the fact that I'm white, there's the privilege there. I am aware of that. But that said, though, it is still very important for all of us to know our rights as American citizens, and not only know them, but stand up for them. And the thing is, if a certain marginalized group is having their civil rights violated on any level, whether it's police brutality or, you know, being falsely accused of crimes or whatever the case may be, even if we are not a part of that group, it is important that we still defend that group because, you know, most of us are a part of some group that has been marginalized at some point, whether we're women, whether you're a person of color, whether you're a Latino, whether you're from a different country, whether your parents were from a different country. I mean, there's just sexual orientation, you know? And so if we are watching the rights of one being threatened, then it is the rights of all of us that are being threatened, even if you're white, straight, and male. You know, it is the very foundation of what our country was based upon was having equal rights, was having access to civil rights, of being treated fairly, of having the same opportunities at life as everybody else has. So that's where the activism comes in. And so there's the education, there is the raising of awareness, letting people you know who you care about have the information that you have, educating people, raising awareness. And then the third element of all of that is the call of action. There are things that you can do. It doesn't, you know, of course, going out in the streets and protesting and holding the signs, of course, that is a huge part of it. That's important too. There are other things that you can do as well, though. Voting, making sure that you know what the people running for office stand for. What are their values? Whether it's not just the president, but your governors, your senators, the mayor, all of these things, district attorneys, you got to make sure you know who these people are who are in charge of our lives, who are in charge on whether or not we get to have civil rights. Know who these people are who are making decisions for you, for me, for all of us. Make sure you vote for the right people. Make sure you always go out and vote. Also, writing letters to senators and sometimes, you know, Congress, the people in charge, writing letters to them, making sure they hear your voice, but also, you know, sometimes it's not always exclusive to just politicians and politics. Sometimes it has to do with corporations and companies, making sure the corporations and companies are doing the right things, whether it's for their hiring practices and making sure that there's no discrimination there, or are they testing on animals, you know, and tell them you will boycott them if they are not operating on the up and up. So we all have to stand up for each other, you guys. It's super, super important. Even if you're not in that group, the next group that is affected might be yours. So we all have to look out for each other. It's super important, you guys. Activism. You can be an activist too. Doesn't mean you have to burn your bra unless you want to. Then I'm okay with it, especially at Lacey's house on Tuesdays. So anyway, guys, that is that. I am excited to welcome Raw Love, aka Buddha from I Love New York and I Love Money. What's up? How are you?
Doing very well. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you for asking. I'm so happy and excited to have you on. I've been bringing on a lot of the cast members from Rock of Love over the last couple of months. And I just recently started branching out into some of the other Of Love shows. And a lot of the fans who have been watching my podcast have been going, you got to get Buddha on. And one thing I've been hearing is that people are saying that similar to myself, that you were sort of the villain on those shows, much like I was. So people are like, you gotta get him on. So would you describe your character in that way? Do you think that's a fair assessment of who you are?
I wouldn't characterize myself as that. I mean, of course, you're free to your interpretation. Everyone else is. I welcome them all because, I mean, at the end of the day, we both know as long as you're being spoken about, you're still relevant. So cool, whatever. All it's news true. Is good news. But for me in particular, I see myself as, I think, just a unique individual. And you have to forgive me. I know that you were on The Rock of Love, but I didn't really watch the show. It's not really my thing. None of the reality TV love shows were, by the way, before I actually ended up getting on one. But for me, it really wasn't about being a bad guy. It was just about being honest to who I am, honest to myself. And certain things, I'm going to speak my mind if I agree. And if I disagree, I'm going to speak my mind as well. So at the end of the day, you know exactly where I stand. So I think some people interpret that as bad, probably similar situation with you, whereas others, I think the majority of others respect that stance, even if they don't agree.
I actually completely agree with you. I think that was very well stated. And that is one of the reasons I really always liked you, because you are very outspoken. You say exactly what you mean. You don't sugarcoat things. And I actually thought that you were quite likable. You had a really big personality and a big presence, and you come across as very confident. You know what you want and you go after it. And it doesn't matter if that looks pretty or not. That's you. And I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Very true. Exactly right.
Yeah. So let's start. Let's go back a little bit and go from the beginning, or even maybe before that, of the Of Love shows, because I didn't know a lot about you personally. I only knew you, the character Buddha, on the shows. And so when I, you know, was going through the, you know, Rolodex of like, who do I want to bring onto the podcast and stuff, and you were one of the names that was kind of on my mind because I loved you on the shows. I started looking into your like IMDb and stuff like that. And I was really, really impressed. It's funny because sometimes we think, we being the viewers, and I'm going to put myself in that category because I'm just, you know, a fan and a viewer as well of these shows. And you kind of think that like the person who is on the TV is, that's just who they are. And then you go and look into them like online. And as I said, I saw you on IMDb and you're like, wow, this person is actually way more than that. That should be an obvious thing, but for some whatever reason, it's not. So I saw, you know, you've got a pretty extensive education, which I was very impressed with. I also didn't realize that you were really into acting, and these VH1 shows were just one of many of the things that you did. So let's talk about how did you get into wanting to do entertainment? Let's talk about where you started with your education, how you went from that into getting into television.
You said one thing earlier that I want to address that I find really interesting.
Okay.
And it's our own personal sense of narcissism. We can't see how others are perceived even when we are perceived that way ourselves. Like, for example, you and I both, having had been on reality TV shows, we know that there's editing. And we know that production is going to show the version of us that they want to see. We know that people are not one dynamic, but multifaceted, right? So it's in knowing that editing exists, even us being as individuals who were on a reality TV show and celebrities, we still have that same bias. When we see someone on reality TV, we assume that's who they are, even though we know it's probably not true. So with me in particular, yeah, no, there's much more than just what they showed. And as a matter of fact, one of the things I wish they had shown more of was my pranks. I had some epic pranks on that show, man. They only showed like one and a half. And I was so, that was the thing I was most mad about. When people would contact me and ask me about the show and everything else, oh, what did you like most? What did you not like most? I'm like, I'm mad they didn't show more of my pranks. Because I had high quality pranks, guys. And it was coming from the source above.
I really love that. I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but I just have to interject. Yeah. I love that about you because I'm definitely a bit of a prankster myself. And yeah. I sort of wish that I was on I Love Money as well, but I was on a different season than you. And I kind of wish that we had been on I Love Money together, because I feel like we could have totally teamed up and been like the ultimate pranksters, because that was totally my style. And I was just all about like pushing the envelope and pushing the boundaries with people to see what they would tolerate, what they would put up with as far as I'm concerned, and then like where they would snap. And that was sort of like where my villain character came into play, is I sort of like mess with people, like poke the beast with a stick. And some people would be like, oh, that's just Lacey being Lacey, and they would just, you know, blow it off. And other people would get so worked up and so upset. And I'm like, see, now you just lost because you allowed me to get you upset. And that was sort of like my way of like causing shenanigans on the shows. So I can imagine that you're
like a master manipulator in that regard, because then you're going to be able to, by poking the bear. You find the weaknesses and know that, okay, now I know how to get this bear to react. So in that case, I'm surprised you didn't win. Did you win the thing?
No. My season actually didn't air, and that's a story for a different day. But the people who are like super into these shows know what happened with Isle of Money. Yes, the guy freaking killed his wife. So I'm like, yeah, that's a whole thing. But
another conversation. That really is another. I would love to know about your psychological state while you were on the show, because I totally understand that situation, that guy, him reacting that way. That's definitely a conversation for another day. I want to hear exactly what your psyche was when you were on that show, because I feel like, to a certain degree, production should have been brought in to a lawsuit. I think they should have been sued. I think he should have went after production. He should have went after VH1, because that was definitely a psychological break that I noticed happened to several people on that show and was happening to me in particular, which is why I left.
Yeah,
a lot of people. Part of that show, I Love Money.
Yeah, a lot of people had a hard time. You know, the guy who won my season, I made it very far, but he won mainly because he was a very strong physical force. And he ended up winning the whole thing. And then he's the one that ended up killing his wife. And the thing that was the issue was that the company that the production company hired to do background checks on everybody, he was Canadian, and they did a background check on him for the United States. They didn't background check him in Canada. Had they done so, they would have found that he actually had been charged with domestic violence in Canada, and he would have not been brought onto the shows had they done the background checks properly. So that's why the whole thing fell apart.
Right.
But it was insane. But yeah, a lot of people had some psychological issues with some of the shows. I was just such a asshole character that it didn't affect me in the way that it did others. But my husband constantly compares me to Bugs Bunny. So just, you know, as you said, poking the bear and exposing the weaknesses. You worded it exactly right. That's what I did. But let's get back to you, though. So you definitely, I feel like your game plan wasn't even really a game plan. It was just being you. It was being your authentic self. Would you say? And you are right about the narcissism that we all have, where we are looking at things from our own perspective, and we forget to think there's other perspectives besides that of our own. And we have to constantly be challenging ourselves and reminding ourselves, because it's not human nature to think about things from Sue's perspective, Bob's perspective, whatever. We have to challenge ourselves to think of things from other people's perspectives. And
being aware of our own biases. Just looking and understand that we all have our own biases, even when we think that we reach a level of celebrity or finance or whatever, or power of authority, and such that we're not affected by that. It's not true. We all have our own biases. You have to stop, evaluate those things, and say, oh, damn, I'm doing the same shit that I told other people not to do. Wow. Let me grow up as well while I'm giving out this grow up advice. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Well said. Yeah. So so let's talk about how did you get from... Okay, tell everybody what your education was, because I was very impressed. And you had, I think you did minor in... You did study some psychology. Is that correct? And then how did you get into television?
Minor in psychology and marketing, and I majored in management information systems. I initially started off in mathematics. I wanted to be a theorist. But then somewhere in my sophomore year, when I was in, I think it was calculus 2 or 3, I was like, I don't want to teach people the rest of my life. This sucks. I need to know more business. So I was always into computers. So at the school I was going to at the time, Florida A&M University, they didn't have the curriculum that I wanted that was both business and enough business, science, and math. They didn't really have all of that, which was a program that I thought was up and coming at the time, which was management information systems. I was a bi-enrollment there at the time, taking classes also at Florida State, but I wanted somewhere that I could kind of call my own. And then I was also modeling. So when I got back into modeling, a lot of people don't know this. While I was doing modeling, I was also doing a whole bunch of music videos at the time. and moving back down south to Miami, I was able to kind of finish off getting my degree there in management information systems. As a matter of fact, I wrote the curriculum for management information systems for my school. I had to go through all these deans. I'll never forget this. I had to go through all these deans, all these classes, all these approvals, because I thought the curriculum that they had at that school, Florida International University, was not a eloquent enough curriculum. I thought it, and I also didn't think it was very realistic to what was going on in the day and time as it was. rewrote it, got all this approval. They approved it. I did this curriculum for the next year and a half, whatever, until I finished. And I remember I came back 2 years later. That same goddamn curriculum that I wrote, that I had to run through all these hoops and get approved, they actually adopted at the fucking school. I'll never forget that.
Get out of here.
And I was like, yo.
Wow.
They didn't give me any credit whatsoever. I was like, y'all could at the very least just like put like a let me sign on the left or something.
Wow.
Anyhow, I finished up at Florida International University. And from there, actually before I graduated, I had already had a full-time job. I was doing, I was a systems analyst, just computer stuff, nerd stuff, more nerd stuff. And then some more nerd stuff while I was modeling, and then acting came along. So, yeah.
Wow, that is incredible. You know, I'm really impressed with how well-rounded you are, because a lot of people either go the intellectual route or they go the creative route. And it's not common that people are able to encompass both aspects of themselves, you know, and the fact that you were able to nurture both sides. And of course, going the intellectual route, going, you know, mathematics or management or business or that sort of thing, it sort of guarantees you, well, I won't say guarantees you, but it increases your likelihood of having a more successful financial future as opposed to acting, modeling, music, things of that nature. But I think it's important to nurture both sides of oneself. And it sounds like you were able to not only do it, but do it successfully, like, and professionally. It's pretty cool that you were able to do all of those things.
Yeah. So funny story about that. Actually, and it's silly, but it is what it is. I mean, there's probably guys right now doing the same thing at my age. I mean, at their age that I was doing at their age, which is the reason why I actually got into modeling. The school I was going to, the Big Breeze, when I was at FAMU, is that I wanted to date more attractive women. And yeah. I felt like I wasn't dating the best of the women. I grew up in Miami. I was born in New York. I grew up in Miami. At the time, that's the only place I had ever lived, except it was in Miami. So when I was at Florida State University, which is very, I mean, literally, they have a railroad tracks. There's Florida State and there's FIU. It's white people on one side, but on the other side,
it's fucking...
So me moving into that, am I allowed to curse on this thing? I don't know.
Yeah, you are.
Okay, cool. Yeah, it's
a
all
big
good.
Fuck yeah.
Curb everything. God, it gets soft inside when you're interviewing. You're like, how do I not say fuck? You know? So anyhow, yeah. So growing up in that environment, in a very mixed, bicultural, multicultural environment down in Miami as it was, going to that division, this kind of college town to me was just very strange. So being there, I was like, I feel like I need to get back to date my regular. This is weird. I got to go. So while I was actually dating one of my sister's friends, funny story about that. But anyhow, my sister, my eldest sister, 6 years older than me, I was always dating her girlfriend. So I've always kind of been into older women. So and she was always hooking me up because her friends was just always kind of like, you know, oh, what's up with your brother? I was like, hey.
Nice.
We had that kind of cool relationship.
That's
anyhow,
awesome.
Dating one of her friends was like, Rod, you know what you need? I think you need to date. You really want to date one of these amazingly beautiful women. You should just take your ass back to Miami and go model. And you'll meet a whole bunch of beautiful model women. And I was like, that's ridiculous. And I thought about it. I was like, wait a minute.
That kind of makes sense.
So I was 19, 20 years old at the time. And I was like, you might be onto something. Actually, I never considered this. So then next semester, got my AA from FAMU, and I went right back down to Miami. I think I took a year off at that time, and I was doing strictly modeling. And so I think it was from like 2000, 2002, I was like literally one of the three model guys on all the music videos shot in Miami, and then all the runway stuff done in Miami. It was a really good time. It was a really good time. Really good year of just getting to know the industry, getting to know people, getting to know individuals, and then exploring how much I actually enjoy the entertainment aspect of it. So it's funny how the draw to me in that arena was always women. And then getting into that arena, that helped me to explore other avenues of financial access, opportunity, and then just other job opportunities. So.
That's awesome. You know, that's not an unfamiliar story to me, because I'm a musician. I've been in bands, you know, my whole adult life and touring the country. And because I am primarily in like rock music and hard rock, it's usually like all dudes and then just me. So I'm married now, but I was, when I was touring, I was single. And it was usually like, you know, my band, which I was the only female in, and then some of the other Maybe like one or two other bands would be on the tour, and then the road crew. So there would literally be like 30 dudes and me. And so, and all of them really just got to know me as like one of the guys. And so I really got a lot of insight into the male psychology by touring with all these different guys for so many years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's really funny because if you hear them talk about why they became a musician, you always think it's going to be like this romantic story. Like, I just love music. I just needed a way to express my inner feelings through guitar. Right. And no, it's just like, I want to get laid. And I want to get laid with hot women. And who?
Yeah, a variety of it. That's what I'm looking for. I was a 19-year-old girl. Yeah, that's what we do.
Yeah, and then it's
not that difficult. We're not that complicated. We just... like women, because you all are so intellectual, you all are so in-depth, and you all think on 1,000 different quantum directions, you think that we're the same way. And we're not. We're just like, vagina.
Yeah. Vagina. Boobs.
Air connected, the most vagina. Yeah. Boobs. We're just cavemen. We're stupid.
Yeah, you know, being married really taught me a lot too, because my husband is very woke, very, very woke, and very compassionate and all that. But he also doesn't sugarcoat things for me. He tells me how it is with like the male psyche, and I totally get it. It is a good thing to know, being a female, having to learn that, and it is a lot more simple when it comes to men and how they think and what their motivations are and what drives them. And also, just because it's different, it doesn't make it wrong either. Like, some women are like, oh, that's just disgusting and that's so gross. It's like, well, if you're a rapist, then maybe yes, but that's not what men are saying generally. That is a drive, you know, and
we're just mammals.
Right.
Turns out, just mammals, people. It's not that common. I think we give ourselves way too much intellectual credit. Or maybe it is that we're giving our mammalian instincts nowhere near enough credit. Like, we're just mammals. You know what I mean? We like to think that we're outthinking our mammalian instincts, and we're not. I mean, come on, man. It's not until recently, I want to say I'm 40 now, it's not until probably the past 4 years that I realized, maybe 5 years that I realized, I have been hypnotized by vagina my entire life. There's something that happens at a certain age when you click out of it, and I do think that it's not about the number of women that you're with, because I've been with enough women where I should have probably snapped out of it some time ago. But I do think it's a certain age. Like, maybe there's a biological trigger in men that it's right. Women are right. Women have said it. I've heard this my entire life, that at men at a certain age, they just don't care to be playing around like that. Mm-hmm. We just don't care to be out in the field like that. And I'm like, that's just because they haven't been out. If they had more options, they would. But no, it's true. At a certain age, something biologically just changes where I don't have to be chasing around doing this nonsense. You wake up out of this trance, this hypnotic state of suggestion, and everything suggests that you should want more vagina. Mm-hmm. Money to get more vagina. I mean, really, if for the average straight man, if there was no vagina, there'd be no planet. We destroy it. We kill each other.
There'd be no like awesome cars. There'd be no trips to Hawaii. There'd be no romance movies.
There'd be death and destruction. It'd be Mars. That must have been what happened to Mars. Like, I can imagine. Males took over. Something happened. There was no more females. And we're like, okay, what do we do now? Well, let's just kill each other. Yeah. Let's see who could die the worst possible death. Let's see. I mean, it's no different than the MMA now. In boxing now. We're trying to see who's the guy. Who's the one guy that... it's no different. We're just mammals, people. So you look back at it, even Roman Empire, right? With the barbarians and wrestling, or rather fighting as gladiators in the whole arena. That thing was like, let's see who's the baddest man alive. And the last man standing lives. Everyone else will be dead. No, man, come on. That's what the world was like if it was not women. So I give you all the credit for Earth being here.
Well, I appreciate that. I won't take all the credit, but I'll take some. No, I'm just teasing. I will say, I think there's a lot of truth to what you say. I always say that human beings are sort of like the equivalent of... a computer that is brand new, that you haven't put any apps on yet, or you haven't customized yet. And it is still, it is a brand new computer, but it still is hardwired to work a specific way. And you can put certain apps on to make the computer unique to itself and unique to you and customized to you, but it still is hardwired to to be a certain way and that you're not going to be able to override that with an app. So I always say that that's sort of like how human beings are. But men are definitely hardwired a certain way. Women are hardwired a certain way. It's not to say that those two can't be compatible just because they are quite different. It's a matter of understanding. This is going to be a really shitty analogy, and I don't mean it to be like putting down either gender, but I'm really, really into dogs, and I'm obsessed with dogs. I've always been obsessed with dogs, and I am a big fan of Cesar Millan, the dog whisperer, and so how he breaks down living successfully with a dog, and what I mean by that is that you're getting as much out of the relationship with the dog as the dog is getting out of the relationship with you. You're coexisting, but it's more than that. You're both benefiting each other's lives. How do you do that? Dogs think completely differently. And if you don't understand why is the dog behaving that way, if you can't figure it out, if you don't understand it, or if you don't try to understand it, oh, look at your baby. I just saw that. Sorry. Let me see one more time. So I've got my monitor over off to the side. So, oh my God, that's so cute. What's this little one's name?
Samson.
Oh, that's adorable. I love that you're a dog person too. But yeah, if you don't take the time to understand the psychology of that dog, and you just misunderstand everything that it does, you're not going to get it. You're not going to have a successful relationship with that dog, nor is it going to have one with you. Likewise, that could be said about men and women. It's not that we are incapable of understanding each other. We're fully capable of it, but we have to take the time to acknowledge the differences and then go, okay, how far am I going to go to try to understand this person who is a little bit different than I am biologically.
I would say that's very accurate. And I think I like your analogy in regards to into the apps. So it sounds like what you're saying is essentially we are as individuals or as a species, we're separated into two. Maybe you're a pink iPhone 10.0 and I'm a gray iPhone 10.0 or 10.1 and you're, or maybe you're an 11.0 and I'm a 12.0 or you're a 12.0, whatever the case may be. The point is that our hard drive, our system is wired to be that way. We can add with so many apps on it, but even to a certain capacity, you can only have with so much memory. You can't change out the actual phone itself. We are who we are, so we have to adapt to one another. And sometimes, maybe in that same way, there's some old ideologies or old thoughts that also need to be wiped out of our minds so that we can open up more space to kind of greater connect in deeper ways.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say that for me personally, one thing that I know generally is hardwired into being a woman is the natural desire, instinct to procreate. And I'm going to be 44 tomorrow, unless you're seeing this podcast on Monday, then I was 44 last week.
But happy birthday.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. One thing for me personally that has made my life so much easier, I do not know why this is, but for whatever reason, I just never had that bug or that itch to have a child. And, you know, for many, many reasons, and I also know that's unusual for me being a woman, but I just, ever since people started asking me if I was going to have kids when I was 20 years old, I was like, you know, I'm just not feeling it. And then as the years went by, people kept asking, oh, well, you're just not there yet. Eventually you will want a kid. It just never happened. And as a result of that, I feel like I didn't have the pressure to like, oh, I have to hurry up and find a man. I got to hurry up and get married. I got to hurry up and get pregnant because my, you know, biological clock is ticking and I'm like, you've got to do this. Come on, let's go. That I just didn't have that pressure. So I knew I always wanted to be married because I do like the idea of having a friend, a life partner, somebody who's like, you know, my husband and I say it's like a never-ending slumber party, you know? And I like having that in my life, having a partner. And but I never was in a hurry. So as you know, I've had long-term relationships. I've been single. I've been promiscuous. I've been monogamous. But I never was in a hurry. So I waited till I was 37 to get married. My husband and I have been together for 8 years. We're super happy. And we just never had that pressure, you know? So I think because I wasn't like, I have to be married by the time I'm 25 so I can hurry up and, you know, because then you're pressuring your mate as a woman. You're pressuring your mate then. And so it just adds a lot of complications. And I'm not saying that they can't, there's a lot of people who obviously who are successfully married and have kids and all that. So I'm not knocking those people, but just for me, it helped make my life easier to not have those pressures as a woman.
So do you want children?
I never wanted them. No, I have four dogs. I have three Great Danes and a little guy that I'm totally, are my kids, happy with that.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So even still, if you had the option to have children, you wouldn't have a child.
No.
Okay. Yeah. It's not for everybody.
Yeah, it's not for everybody. I get too anxious. I'd be scared to death constantly for my kid. And also, I just, I like my life the way it is. And I don't want to give up certain things. I feel like if you're going to have a kid, you got to really like dedicate your life to that child. And that's just not something that I felt was in the cards for me. I felt like I could spend my time better in other ways. So, yeah. But I do like a lot of, you've been kind of outspoken about genders on your Instagram and you know, the complications and stuff like that. I appreciate your honesty with all that good mm-hmm. stuff. So let's fast forward now. So you were into, you got into modeling and then you eventually got into acting. How did you end up on reality TV?
I actually went on the casting when I first landed. So what brought me over to LA finally was I got booked on a show called Nip/Tuck. And I got 3 co-star appearances on Nip/Tuck. I just went on some casting kind of just randomly one time when I was visiting LA. One of my boys wanted me to move to LA. So I went to visit 4 days, stayed with him, went on a couple castings online, submitted online. And a couple months later, I got picked. I didn't even know what the hell. I thought it was long missed. You know, I thought it was a long missed opportunity by the time the cast director contacted me. So anyhow, they booked me on 3 episodes for Nip/Tuck, which got me my SAG card.
Okay.
I figured out after having enough conversation how big of a deal that was. So I made the trip from Miami. I drove cross country to LA. It took me like 4 days, I think 4 or 5 days the first time. I've done it 3 times now, but 4 or 5 days the first time. And then I think on 4 days, and on the 5th day was that Tuesday when we started filming. And it was the most hilarious thing ever. So yeah, they got me my 3 days. I was there for the first 2 weeks. I got my SAG. And then from there, I went a couple castings. One casting led me to VH1 Smartest Model. I think it was called Smartest Model. Yeah, something like
okay,
that.
Okay, I remember that show. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I was hearing they were casting for Smartest Model. So I said, okay, well, I'll go check it out. I'm a pretty smart guy. I know stuff. So I went into the casting for Smartest Model. And the casting director there at the time was like, nah, man, you're definitely not going to get picked. And I thought it was really funny the way he said it. I'm smart. Like, what? You're looking for smart people. I'm smart. He's like, nah, this is not really for smart people. And you're actually smart. He's like, we're looking like for stupid people.
that are trying to be smart. Oh, my God, that's funny.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, okay. He's like, yeah, but I got something coming up in a few months for you. You know, he's like, so just, you know, keep your phone number. Don't change anything. And I'll get back and let you know. I was like, all right, man, cool. So anyhow, I went on about my life, went on back on to do my acting thing, my training, all the stuff I was doing. And then some months later, the same guy gave me a call and said, hey, yo, Rob, what's up? Hey, what's going on? He said, you know, this is so-and-so from VH1. Remember that thing? I want you to come in and have a conversation about it. I said, okay, cool. So we went in and he's like, he told me what the show was. And I was like, oh, okay. And that was the whole conversation from there.
That's amazing. That is really, really funny, though. Like, what a good way to be turned down from a show. Like, sorry, you're too intelligent. We're actually looking for idiots.
Yeah. We're looking for dumb people that think they're smart so we can pick on them and make fun of attractive people who think they're fucking smart. I was like, oh, okay. That makes sense. I know assholes like that. Yeah. Go get them.
I totally remember that show. I forgot until you brought it up. It's so funny. So had you seen, when you did I Love New York, had you seen Flavor of Love yet?
I had not. I knew about Flavor of Love. I saw a couple episodes, but honestly, it was just too ratchet for me. I was like, I don't want it. I've never really... And honestly, I've never been big on TV. I've always been big on just kind of living life, trying my best to live life. And at times and years where I delved deep into TV, the next year I always snap back and like, yo, what are you doing, man? You're missing life. Life is out there. So for the next year, I might not watch TV and just kind of just go live life, you know?
That's
so, no, I hadn't.
So you basically like were diving into the deep end of this pool of I Love New York. I will tell you, so my character that I went with when I was doing the reality shows was very, very much influenced by New York. And I had watched her on Flavor of Love and before I ever was even knew about Rock of Love. And I remember watching her and I was just like, holy shit, she is like hell on wheels. And so then when I got invited to do Rock of Love, I was like, well, I have to be like the rock and roll version of New York. Like I have to do that. That looks like so much fun. If I'm going to do a reality TV show, I'm going to make it like, I'm going to go for it, you know? So, so, and I've met New York a couple of times in passing. It was just in passing, but she was very, very sweet to me. But watching her on those shows, as I said, she's like, she's a firecracker. So I can only imagine, you know, that being on a show with her, not being familiar with her personality or her background, seems like that would be a challenge in of itself. And then like her mother is also, you know, an intense woman. So, did you become aware of that right away? Or what were your thoughts when the show started? What were your thoughts on the other castmates? What were your thoughts on New York? Like, first going into this, did you have a game plan for yourself? Let's talk about that.
Well, so first, I did not know New York. I knew, you know, because obviously she was all on TV and stuff, so I had knew about Flavor Flav. I knew that she was one of the ones on there, and she was like the really loud, ratchet one. I knew that much about it, but I hadn't seen the shows. So once I went into the casting, the casting director made me aware of what it was. I didn't say yes. I was like, all right, man, then I ain't come here to LA for this shit. So I'm going to go home. I'll think about it. I'll let you know. And he was like, well, this thing is really moving fast. You know, I don't know if you know, but it's kind of a big deal. I said, look, give me a few days and I'll get back to you. So I had gone back home. I lived in Hollywood at the time. And I went ahead and did some research to go see the shows. I'm like, let me see what the hell I'm getting into before I, you know. So I saw the Flavor Flavs, and I like binge watched as much as I could. I mean, as much as I could stomach. I didn't see them all from start to finish, but I skipped a few episodes here and there. But basically just get it, encapsulate who she was, so I get an understanding of who she was and this person I was going to be dealing with. So immediately looking at the show, I said, okay, she's a hood rat. That was my first thought. Okay, she's a hood rat. So after seeing this, she's a hood rat, which I'm cool. It's no big deal to me. I'll go on and have a good time, and I'll probably be off, and I'm thinking 3-4 episodes, only because it wasn't so much about her, because I could, even though I, in my mind at the time, I saw her as a hood rat, I still saw her as really cute, really adorable, really like potential there as maybe something. I don't know what, I don't know if it's a relationship or if it's a friendship or what, but definitely like somebody who would probably be cool to get to know, and we can help each other grow in that way, you know, in our own indistinct ways. But yeah, once I actually got onto the show, there really wasn't anything that I didn't expect. I honestly expected that I was going to be there 3 or 4 episodes, not because of her, but because of the guys. I felt like I was more concerned about the guys. If there was going to be somebody on there like Chance or something like that, or someone who was just over the top, extra, you know, aggressive toward me, I'm just not that guy, man. I'm going to knock you the fuck out and pack my bags and go home. I'm not going to play this game. You know what right. I mean? So for me, that was honestly my only concern. That was it. So when I first went on the show, and that's the first thing I was looking for, was like, all right, who on here is going to want to be the new Chance? It's going to be one. And then that turned out to be this one guy, Millione, who ironically, I don't know if you, have you, do you know what I'm talking about, Millione?
No, who's that?
So I forget the guy, his actual name, but he had to Google his name, Millione, million, like million, but instead of million, O-W-N at the end. He was actually convicted for murder, framed by police.
Oh my God. And so wait, framed I'm so police. Sorry. I'm not following you. Is he one of the ones that was a castmate also?
He was one of the contestants that was on one of the first 20. Look up his case. It's crazy. He was one of the first 20. Now,
oh wow.
He was also eliminated that night because he was really over the top, very just like he was instigating a lot of fights. So he was eventually fingered later on. I think like a year or 2 years later, he was fingered by some police by some person. The police officer ended up apparently forging some documents to say that he had murdered someone.
Oh my God.
So Millione ended up going to prison. In prison, something happened where he got exonerated. He sued the police department and he ended up getting like $2 million.
I know who you're talking about. I know who you're talking about. Does he live in San Francisco? And does he
I believe he does. That sounds
I know from exactly.
I know he's from Cali. Yes.
Yes, I know exactly who you're talking about. That was fucked up. I know exactly what you're talking about.
How perfect is that in relation to what we're dealing with? I mean, we're two celebrities from VH1 and we had someone else who was a temporary celebrity. You know, if we had 15 minutes, he had, you know, one. But still, this is someone who was also put into the system due to the framing of a police officer.
Yeah.
End up suing the system, becoming a millionaire because of that, but still end up losing 10 years or 8 years or whatever it was.
On Instagram, he has an incredible story, and it's at Jamal, J-A-M-A-L, and then True, like T-R-U, Love, L-O-V-E. And yes, I think he ended up making a film or a documentary about that. And you're right, he was imprisoned for like 6 years or something insane for a crime that he absolutely did not commit. And that is a very, thanks, Scott. That is a very, very common story for Black men. And it happens way more than people are willing to acknowledge. And a lot of people think like, well, if you went to jail, you must have done something wrong. But that is absolutely not the case. And a lot of people also don't understand that the whole like prison system in the United States is very much a business. It is a business. It is not a justice.
Business.
Yes, exactly. It is not about justice. It is not about any of those things that you would like to think like, oh, they're just keeping our society safe. No, it's about getting people elected. It's about numbers. It's about look how many criminals we put away when really it's just people. Well, who do we care about the least that people will be less likely to speak out against Black men? Like, let's just put them all in prison. It doesn't matter, you know?
If we just keep demonizing the group, then we can rationalize locking them up. And in rationalizing and locking them up, we can then make money per person. I mean, it's a complete conflict of interest. That to me makes absolutely no sense. It's no more sensical than when they have the separation of church and state. As soon as you have a church that starts voting, that starts saying vote for this person, well, now there's no separation of church and state because there's a direct conflict, there's a direct contradiction. It doesn't make any sense. The conflict of interest. You cannot have a system that says freedom and justice, liberty for all, and then have a prison system that says for profit. That's not freedom. You can't have freedom if it's for profit. It doesn't make sense. It's total contradiction in terms.
Absolutely. And I really think that this is a ignorance on society's part. You know, I've learned a little bit about this topic. I still have a lot more to learn, but I'm working on it. One of the things that I learned that is shocking to me is that the fact that the United States has more people in jails and prisons per capita than any country in the entire world, including Russia and China. And that is just insane to me because, you know, the United States is always talking about we are the land of the free, the land of the free. And if we have more people in prison per capita, how is that free? You know?
It makes no sense. Clearly something has broken there in the system. I mean, when you think about it, United States of America has 5% of the people in the world, in all the world, 5%. But of all the prisoners in the world, we have 25% of all the prisons in the world, 25%. But as you said, it's supposed to be the land of the free. It seems like the land of the enslaved.
The land of incarceration.
Or the land of the prisoners, at the very least, the land of the prisoners. Yeah. And then when you look at the prison population, you say, well, what? Of that 25%, how many of them are actually Latino and Black and just minorities?
Mm-hmm.
72%?
Wow.
And that then makes sense that to say that America is then the land of the imprisoned minorities. That makes perfect sense in terms.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of fact when you do the numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. And
that's not free for all. Clearly, that's not free for all.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Clearly, that's not free for all.
Oh, yeah.
It can't be.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's a frustrating situation because there's so much ignorance on the topic. And, you know, a lot of the motivation behind imprisoning people and jailing people is not necessarily to make street safer or whatever. It's all about getting elected because if you're a district attorney or if you are the leader of your city on whatever level, whether you're a mayor or whatever your political title is, if you can go like, I'm tough on crime and because ever since I was in office or I was in power, ever since I was a district attorney, this many more people, bad guys, have been put away. And so therefore I'm making you safe. And so therefore you should elect me again, you know? And so it all becomes about advancing that person's career, not about actually making the streets safe. As evident by, there has been tons and tons of research on the topic and the amount that we imprison people and jail them actually doesn't equate to less crime. So there's There's other ways.
And then
to
there's
do
more policing. It doesn't make any sense.
It's a
you're
vicious
locking
cycle.
Up more people, and then you're having more policing, but there's not less crime. This doesn't make any sense. These numbers don't make any sense. If you're locking up more criminals, then that should mean one, that you probably need less policing because there's more criminals that are off the streets.
I see what you're saying. That's a good point. That's a really good point.
Doesn't make any sense. And why are you increasing the policing if you're arresting more people? It doesn't make more sense. It's a contradiction all around. It's a contradiction. And it all points to one thing, and that is the systematic control, the systematic direction that for some reason, and I really wonder, no one's asking that question. For some reason, there is a sect of people that want success in America to just look white. Mm-hmm. And I don't get it, because I'm of the opinion that the more mixed freaking Brazilian looking we get, the more intelligent or as America, I think the more collectively unified we'll be. So let's just get to that shit already. Like, I don't care what that looks like. Black, white, white, mixed, black, yellow, orange, purple. I don't care. Let's get to looking like aliens in 100 years from now. Well, we might look 200 years from now. Let's get to looking like that as soon as possible so we can get to the intellectual part of it. And then really, everyone is created equal. Now it just comes down to character and intellect. Let's get to that part.
Very well said. And the thing is, you know, I don't want a society of all the same people, because when you have different perspectives, different cultures, different ideas, different backgrounds, and you bring all of that together, then that's when you're able to really advance the human race. Because, you know, if there's a problem that needs to be solved, if it's like we need a vaccine for coronavirus, or we need new movies and music, or whatever we need, the more diverse your group that comes together, the more brain power, the more creative from different types of people, you're going to get to that vaccine more quickly. Yeah. You're going to get to that cool new music and movies and film more quickly. Like we can't just have everything all the same, because all the same equals the same ideas and the same outcomes and the same results. We need more. We need more brains, more backgrounds, more cultures to come together to make society better.
Yes, I don't know what your belief system is. I absolutely believe in God. And I absolutely believe that each individual and each thing is a body. It's but a molecule on the body of God. And given that, the sooner we get everyone together with all the different diversities of molecules of the body of God that we are, the sooner we get together collectively and have a conversation and stop being fucking lazy. We're being intellectually lazy. It's easy. It's so. And honestly, I believe maybe at the core of it, that's really what the battle is. The battle of the intellectual versus the non-intellectual. The intellectuals are saying, what are you talking about? We should want to advance the human race, people. There's a whole fucking universe and maybe multiverse out there that we want to discover. Like, why are we still stuck on this planet talking about dumb shit? Right? There's that part of it. Like, it just seems like this stuff is really stupid, guys. If we start, Mensa doesn't care about your culture. If you start to get to the upper levels of 1% of intellect, they don't care about your color. They care about your brain. We're going to get your brain power and combine you with other Mensans, Mensonians, whatever they're called, so that we can have the best brain power in the room to come up with the best solutions to take us to fucking Mars, to take us to Jupiter. I mean, there's bigger things, man, than this little petty shit. I mean, come on, man. We're arguing over crumbs over here. And I think that's really what it is. Maybe it's like the intellects are saying, let's progressively move the human race forward, when the non-intellects are saying, race? Did someone say race?
I
and we're like, what?
I agree with you.
Somebody shut these idiots up, you know?
Yeah. So I agree with you in theory. I disagree with you on semantics, where you're saying intellect. I would use the word compassion, because I've known plenty of intelligent people who have no compassion whatsoever. And so for me personally, how I divide the world and our society into two categories: either you have compassion or you don't have compassion. And this sort of goes back to what you were saying at the beginning of this interview about how we all have that kind of narcissism in ourselves, and we have to constantly challenge ourselves to be aware of it and think outside of that. And so I feel like a lot of people who don't have that compassion are not able to see things are different for this race of people versus my race, or things are different for this gender versus my gender. They're just not able to see it, or they're not willing to see it. And to me, you got to like dive into that compassion within you in order to go, you know what? Maybe we should be looking out for everybody, not just my type of person, or not just me and my people.
Okay.
You know?
So based on what you're saying, I can see two different camps going the same direction. I don't think it has to be exclusively compassionate or intellectual. I can see there's an intellectual camp that says we should go this way. And then you have the compassionate people saying, yeah, we agree. We should go this way. You have your reasons as a compassionate person.
Yeah, I agree.
I have my intellectual person. And those who are in, who are not compassionate, right? They're saying go a different direction. And the same way that the ones who are non-intellectual are saying, yeah, we should go in a different direction. So they, for whatever reason, for their own reasons, are going a different direction. So now you end up having maybe that's the left and the right. I don't know. But in this case, you have the divide. So I think we can be on the same team, even if we're going the same direction, even if we're in two different camps.
I agree.
I think that's what that
is. Yeah, 100%. I think that's very well worded for sure. So let's get into, of course, because this is such an important issue anyway, but it's also, of course, a very important issue right now that I feel is finally being brought to, is being given the attention that it deserves. Let's talk about what's been happening in our society ever since the death of George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter movements and all of the protests and things. I mean, I can only imagine how frustrating it must be for people of color, because this is something they have been screaming about for decades, if not centuries. And finally, everybody else is kind of like, oh yeah, maybe we should do something about this whole police brutality thing directed primarily at marginalized groups. And you guys are like, you think? Welcome to the club. You finally got here. Do you think that, okay, let me ask you this. How are you feeling about everything? Do you feel hopeful? Do you feel more positive that change might actually happen? Or is it more frustration that it's taken everybody so long to kind of have this awareness? Like, just tell me how you feel about everything that's happening right now.
I feel blessed. Absolutely blessed. I feel like everything is going in the exact direction it should be going. And I feel fortunate that I'm alive and I'm young and youthful and healthy. No problems whatsoever. I'm wealthy in spirit and in life, that I'm able to enjoy this fully, experience it fully. That's it.
Has it been painful for you? Has it been triggering? Has it been, I mean, of course, the George Floyd thing was fucking heartbreaking. It was really, really upsetting. But I would imagine that people of color, they're like, yeah, this is our reality. And this is, you know, for me, it's something new. For people of color, they're like, this isn't new, you know? Was there a lot of pain for you? Or is it more hope? Or is it mixed emotions?
At first, there was a lot of pain. And seeing Ahmaud Arbery, Castile, and Floyd, I mean, so many others. I mean, it's always pain. It's always pain. And hope follows. I think if anyone in America, I think we can agree on this. If anyone in America, as a cultural people who have embodied hope, I think it's Black Americans. I mean, it's what got us through slavery. So we're pretty good at hope. So I think, I don't know if that's something genetic, or maybe it's driven into all human beings. I don't know. Because I mean, when you look at the Holocaust, right? Jews had hope, and that's what got them through. So maybe it's something that's just in all of us as a people. But I think for the most part, maybe Black people as a culture, Black Americans as a culture, we're in really good practice of being hopeful. You know, a lot of times it's all we got. You know, growing up and where we grow up, all we got is the hope that someone's going to make it out this bitch, you know, and do something with themselves. And we can look back and say, I knew him when he was coming up, man. At least one got out of here before I closed my eyes and died. At least I could say that. So I've always had hope. When I see these things happen, it always hurts. Every time. Every time when you see someone's life taken and you know that there are people out here in this world, in this 2020, in this future that we live in, there are people out here that still see someone as less of a human, as a subhuman, less than an animal because of the color of their skin. Man. And really, at the end of the day, it doesn't have to do with color skin. I think at the core foundation of it, it has to do with bullies, Mm-hmm. You know, and I think we were on to something, you know, years ago when there was a whole big anti-bully movement. I think it really comes down to that. It really comes down to bullies, those who are empowering of authority that are undeserving. Mm-hmm. And so because they're undeserving, they want to fight and they want to bully to keep that position of authority. Because, I mean, look, we know, we all know the history of America. We don't have to go into the depths of that. We know how we got here. We know that pirates and criminals came here. Right? That's what it's been. At the end of the day, we, Christopher Columbus, the celebrated Pirates Day.
Yeah, 100%. You're right.
Mm-hmm. This is what it is. So we understand that naturally the system was set up, and let's be clear about this. Here's a controversial statement that I'm sure a lot of Black people will be pissed off at that I would say, but white people, white Americans, given the credit that is credit due, which I think is a problem on both sides, mm-hmm. architect the fuck out this country. Man, through a lot of blood, a lot of sweat, a lot of tears that were not theirs. Through everyone else.
What do you mean by architect?
I mean, so when I think of architect, I think of blueprint.
Okay.
You said we're going to blueprint how we're going to make this land work. Mm-hmm. That's something that white people did here in America. That's not to say that other cultures haven't done the same in other places and couldn't have done the same here as well. However, this is what they did. Mm-hmm. White Americans that we know of now, white Europeans now, Spaniards then, white Americans now architect this country. Absolutely no doubt about it. I don't think anybody with any Black person with any true sense of knowing to seeing how this happened, again, blood, sweat, and tears that were not their own. But still, it was the blueprint was there. Now, the building of the country was on the backs of slaves. This we know, textile in the north and then agriculture in the south. We know that. We're not arguing that point. Black people, for the most part, don't argue. We say, yo, we built this. Yeah, well, if white people argued we architected, we'd be like, well, yeah, it's kind of a hard argument. It's true. Y'all did blueprint this thing. But that is to say, we're a team. The team made this happen.
Well,
and of course, it's controversial to say team because we didn't volunteer for the job. We were slaves in that.
Yeah.
To say that we were parts in this thing. Or to say the hard labor was on us. But at the end of the day, I think what most Black people are asking for, that reparations piece of it, that whole payback to the Black community, has everything to do with that. To say, listen, as unwilling members on this fucking team, all we're asking for is some payback, some retroactive pay for all that shit that our ancestors did, man. Goddamn.
Retribution.
Can we get some? That's retribution.
Yes.
That's what retribution is.
Yeah.
People don't they try to make it something bigger and more sinister and evil than what it is. But no, all we're asking for, if I worked your ass off, Lacey, for 3 months and said, hey, you're going to come in as an intern. You're going to come in as an intern. I'm going to work you for free 3 months. And I worked your ass off. I told you that you had one job to do when I hired you. When you came in, I gave you 20 jobs. After 3 months of doing all that work, you say, yo, man, I quit. You leave. And then you look, if you were to look at me in my face and say, you know what, as a matter of fact, not only do I quit, but you need to pay me for all that work that I've done because I did not sign up for this. You exploited me. You took advantage of me and I demand retroactive pay. I may be able to argue that point. I may be able to argue my position, but the truth is you have a fair point. You did not sign up for that. So I should, in fair human decency and fair business decency, to save this relationship and to say, you know what, I appreciate you, even if I gave you something less than maybe what you deserve. If I gave you something, you'd be like, well, at least I got something.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
You didn't just pretend like there was no value at all.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
It's like at least some value was shown. You didn't just deny that I had no value at all. I think what Black people are asking for is to show, is to just a representation, something to say that, hey, you had value here.
I agree with everything that you said. I definitely agree with, not that it's my say in anything, but I definitely would be in agreement of any leader or politician that was encouraging and or insisting on retributions for Black people, 100%. Because the other thing, too, that a lot of racist people refuse to admit is that the fact that systemic racism still exists. And so I've heard people wrongly say that, like, well, you know, like a white person who's racist might say, well, you know, I work hard at life and I get all the things that I am going after in life because I work hard. And so then their false conclusion is like, so then if a black person doesn't get it, it's because they don't work as hard as I do. And they try to attribute it to like laziness or that sort of thing, which is ridiculous. And what they don't understand is simple facts like, if a black person and a white person who are equally educated and qualified both go to a bank for a small business loan, it is exponentially more likely the white person will get the small business loan over the black person. Same thing with going to buy a house. Same thing with, you know, trying to get a job. A white person and a black person, same level of education, and or maybe even the black person has a better resume, it's more likely the white person will get hired. So there's all these like roadblocks and obstacles that if a person ignorantly denies those obstacles, then it's only going to, then they're basically blaming the victim. They're putting the blame on people of color. And it's not the people of color. It is the system that just, even the schools, the education, you know, certain neighborhoods have funding for their schools, other neighborhoods do not. So it's sort of like there's hurdles everywhere from what I have come to understand. And this is where the retributions are important. And also just recognizing these unfair racist obstacles and removing them so that we all as Americans, regardless of our race, have the same chance of the same opportunities as the next person. Would you say that's a fair assessment of things?
Yes. I would give it to analogy to say, if the parentless, homeless, poor, clothing tattered child didn't dress that way, she would not have been raped.
Okay.
You see all the obstacles against that child. A rapist would say, a pedophile rapist would say, well, it's her fault because she dressed that way. But when you look at it in the broad context of why she was in tattered clothing on the street, well, because she was poor, homeless, parentless, child. The number of circumstances, the number of reasons as to why she landed in that position is irrelevant. You know that the key fact is that there's no one looking out for her. She's alone. She's homeless. She's poor. She's in tattered clothing. As a pedophile rapist, you're saying, if she didn't dress that way, I wouldn't have raped her. Sir, you have problems. You are sick. That's what this is. So they're saying, when they look at the black community, they're saying, okay, well, hey, you would be in a better position had you done more. And you're like, wait a minute. You're not understanding why I'm in this position in the first place. I'm in a position that you can't fathom. You see me. And as beautiful as it is, there actually is a beautiful ignorance there. If you really think about it, there's a beautiful ignorance there. Those people can't see the racism. They can't see the obstacles that are put in front of the average black person because they just see you as another person. There's actually a beautiful ignorance there. They're just seeing a black man and a white man. They're like, yo, well, I had every obstacle. I conquered all my problems. Why can't you conquer yours? Man, God bless your heart, brother. You can't see the obstacles that are in front of me. You just see me as another man. I love you, bro. I really do. That actually is a good person that will make that statement. Now, the evil ones would say, I don't care. I see your obstacles. Yeah, you got to go through the police force. Yeah, you got to go through poor education. Yeah, you got to go through tattered books. Yeah, you got to go through the poor teachers. Yes, you have to go through walking to school, sitting in the back of the bus and figure it out, knowing that you're going to be ostracized throughout your entire life for simply having a complexion darker than the majority. Yeah, I see all that, and I don't care. Nigga, die. That's the evil one. Those are the people I'm concerned about.
Agreed.
Not the one that says, well, you're just a man like me. Why can't you pull yourself up by your bootstraps? I get it, brother. You don't see that I don't have any boots or straps to pull up in the first place.
Absolutely. Well, listen, I think we could go on for hours and hours about this. And I love everything that you say. I love everything you stand for. I love how outspoken you are. Before we run, I do want to bring up one other thing real quick. And you and I talked on the phone a little bit before this interview. And I told you I was going to bring this up. And now that I've kind of feel like I've gotten to know you a little tiny bit, I really am curious about your feelings on this. So one thing that I always preach in my podcast is about inclusivity. And it's something that's really important to me. You know, America is a melting pot. We have so many different types of people and different races and different nationalities and genders and sexual orientation. And my whole thing is everybody should be allotted an equal shot. Everybody's voice should be heard. Excuse me. And everybody should have fair treatment. So I feel like in speaking to you that you were sort of like-minded on that belief system as well. A few hours before this interview started, you know, this podcast has a pretty big LGBTQ fan base. There's a lot of people from that community that watch this podcast. And somebody reached out to me literally just a few hours ago and pointed me to a video that you had made, I think last September or so, that you posted on your Instagram. And they said, hey, you know, Lacey, you got to check out Raw. He comes across as homophobic in this video. So I went and checked it out. And the gist I got from it was that you had concerns about the LGBTQ lifestyle being represented in mainstream culture, and specifically maybe TV and movies, and even more specific than that, maybe TV and movies that is geared towards children. And you had concerns about that. The way that you said it made me feel like it was insensitive, I guess, for lack of better words, to the plight of LGBTQ, which in some ways is similar to plights of other marginalized groups. So can I ask you, what is your feelings about the LGBTQ community as a whole, or as their plight towards equal rights? And how does that, what about that concerns you?
I think children should be left out of it. I think children should be left out of all varieties of...
like pop culture?
No, not pop culture. I think children should be left out of it. That's my only position. At the end of the day, I feel like children are very sensitive. I don't feel like, this is a matter of fact. Children are very sensitive. They're open vessels, open spirits. They're whiteboards ready to be written on. I think when it comes to that, let them have a clear view of what up and down is, what left and right is, what white and black is. Let them have that. Let them understand what life actually is on a basic A, B, C, D level. And as they get older, expose them to more appropriately. And when it comes to adults, I think every adult should be included. Absolutely. Have your opinion. I don't give two shits about anyone's sexuality personally. I don't know why anyone does. I frankly don't even understand that. Why would I? I shouldn't even know who you're sleeping with. Mm-hmm. Why would I? For me, I don't care along those lines. I just believe, leave children out of it. The same way I don't think anyone should have to explain to their child what different varieties of death people can be killed in. I don't want to show my child a picture of a decapitated head from a car accident, or someone who tortured his wife to death. I don't want to show them that picture any more than I want to show anything on the lines of a variety of sexuality. Just keep it very simple for children. And as they grow up, expose them to more.
Well, of course, I think that that children should not be exposed to sex and sexuality at a young age. But we're not talking about, you know, children are not being shown porn. I think that what you're talking about, I know in the video on Instagram, you had mentioned Teletubbies and things like that. I think a couple of points that I would like to make is, it's not the LGBTQ community as a whole that is making these TV shows. I personally haven't watched Teletubbies, but my take on that is they're not, you know, fucking each other in the ass on Teletubbies. I think that it's more about like the lightheartedness, the cultural differences, things of that nature. From my perspective, I don't think Teletubbies were like, hey, we're gay and I just fucked him in the ass. You know, I'm not being showing them porn, but if one perceives them, if an adult perceives that as being quote unquote gay, I think that, you know, everything that I have come to understand, and I like to consider myself to be a pretty educated, pretty well-read individual. My understanding is that people are born gay. They are not, this isn't a choice they make, as evident by
Everyone? You think everyone's born gay?
Well, who would want to take a more challenging path in life if they didn't have to? I mean, people who are gay get ostracized. Oh. They get beaten. They get chastised. They get killed just for being, just as much as other people in other marginalized groups get beaten.
Okay, so
killed,
let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Let me just ask you a question. So I don't disagree with that a significant portion are absolutely born gay. I think we all, or at least me, I know for me for sure, I have run into kids that are clearly 2 years old and gay. I'm like, this kid is gay. you can tell some kids just gay. This is what he is. It's cool, no big deal. I've seen that, so I get that part of it. But I've also statistically know this part, and I've seen this part myself. I witnessed it myself, in such that sexual abuse is a huge factor. For example, if a boy is not gay and he's 4 years old or 5 years old and has been molested by some male figure, the odds of him then being gay, and in fact, him growing up to be a pedophile and abusing the same way in which he's abused, goes up exponentially high.
Oh, my friend, I have to strongly disagree with that. I have to tell you, I actually was sexually abused, so I know a lot about that because I had to learn about it in order as part of my own personal healing. And
how old were you when you were abused?
I was very young. I started when I was about 5 years old, and it finally ended when I was about 8. I was able to get away from the person. And
do
I
you
can
remember
talk about
your sexuality
it.
Prior to that?
I'm
do
sorry.
Do you remember your sexuality? Do you remember your sexual preference prior to being abused?
No, I do not.
Okay, so currently now, do you consider yourself bisexual?
No, I consider myself to be straight, although I have played around, but that wasn't because of a way I was born or not born. I've always been a straight person that had a couple of crazy nights with too much alcohol. So, but you know, I strongly disagree with, and I think there's a lot of science to back it up, that just because one is sexually abused doesn't necessarily mean, or because they are born gay does not make them more or less inclined to be a pedophile or an abuser themselves. I mean, somebody who is an abuser or a pedophile, that is a sick person and has nothing to do with their sexual orientation. And, you know, it's making connections and connecting dots that shouldn't be connected. And that is a common misunderstanding. But they are not more gay pedophiles than there are. And also being a pedophile, it doesn't have to do with the gender of your victim. You're a pedophile is a pedophile is a pedophile. It doesn't have to do with being gay or being straight. It's about their need to dominate and their need to overpower, regardless of who is there. The reason that a lot of these priests were preying on young boys is not because they were gay per se, but because that was all that was around them.
Uh-huh. Because of access.
Because of access. Right.
Okay. So I'm not the professional on that. I don't know the numbers on that. So we could debate our opinions all day on that. I wouldn't know. You'd have to ask an expert that knows those numbers.
But do you see
probably a round table of experts so that we can get the real opinion. Because, you know, everybody has their own bias.
You got to be careful about putting that sort of rhetoric out there, because the fact of the matter is that you are so fully understanding of the plight of marginalized groups, and you have to understand whether or not you agree or disagree with whether gay people were born that way or not. They are a group that does get viciously attacked, that gets ostracized just for being who they are. So I feel like we all have to be on some level, if we care about human beings, we have to be aware of our rhetoric, of our narrative. If we have our own thoughts, private thoughts of just, you know, you and your loved one or you and your buddy or whatever in the privacy of your own home, that's one thing. But when you put a narrative online and you are a public figure, you are in the public eye, that is where you are taking on a responsibility that you have to tread lightly and tread responsibly, in my opinion. And I know one of the things that kind of made me raise an eyebrow was in your video, you said something about, you know, LGBTQ, ABCDE, whatever they are called. And So the reason that made me raise an eyebrow is because from my perspective was that you were saying that you're not even giving that community of people the respect of giving the title of which they assume. So
Let's talk about that. That's a good point.
Okay.
It's a good topic, actually. Okay. Let's talk about that. So that's important. So let me tell you, I had a friend of mine. So a friend of mine who was renting out a home here, she's a lesbian young lady, beautiful, black, gorgeous woman, who's totally involved in the LGBT community and everything else. Now, I thought it was just LGBTQ until she informed me of the other letters that follow. Just a while ago, last year sometime. And I chuckle only because I found it offensive for her. And I told her, you know, if I was lesbian or if I was gay or if I was bisexual, I think I'd be offended at all the rest of, at all the extra letters. Because she went into, and again, I'm ignorant of this, so you'll have to, I mean, it's easy to attack the guy who doesn't know shit.
I appreciate your honesty. You know,
so fill me in. It's something with an A, and then she mentioned transgender, that right, which is a T. Then she mentioned something where you're not identifying with your sex. Then there was something else where there was a bestiality involved in this.
What?
And then there was something else where now they were trying to fit in the pedophilia. And then there was something
God.
Else where they were trying to fit in like tree sex or some shit like that, earth sex or some shit like that. I'm like, listen, if this makes me the asshole for saying LGBT, LMNOP, listen, I'll just have to be the asshole and take that for the rest of community. Of thinkers who are saying, "Listen, if I was lesbian, if I was gay, if I was bisexual, if I was in that community, I would be offended that someone would try to add in bestiality."
Okay, well, let me stop you. Let me stop you.
Add in pedophilia. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. If that were true, then yes, of course, that would be horrendous. But I will tell you that again, it's about. Just as much as it is terrible for somebody who is racist to have a wrong idea, well, black people don't advance because they're all lazy, and that's just it. That would be an irresponsible narrative to put out there, and to put it out there without having the education to back it up. It's important when it comes to these sensitive issues, and I don't mean sensitive from a perspective like I don't want to hurt someone's feelings. I mean sensitive as in these are marginalized groups of people who suffer greatly at the hands of bigots. And it's important for us all to try to understand each other and learn about each other. I expect as a woman, I expect my black friends to back up my plight in the Me Too movement. My gay friends expect me as a woman to defend their plight in the LGBTQ community. We all are marginalized groups in different ways, but it's important that we support each other because ultimately we are all marginalized. So just hang on one second. Sorry to interrupt you. Real quick, the LGBTQ, L, lesbian, B,
wait.
Bisexual.
So give me all the letters. Give me all the letters. Okay, so LGBT, you got that one.
L, yes. So the L is lesbian. LG is gay. B, bisexual. T, transgender, not tranny. We don't say tranny. That is an offensive word. Just as much as I wouldn't refer to you as Negro, super offensive.
Okay.
Not okay.
Wait, nope. You say transgender?
Transgender, yes, or trans for short. LGBTQ is queer. And then sometimes...
Hey, but there's more letters. She told me a whole... She gave me like four more letters behind that.
I think... I personally don't have the education on that. I will tell you right now, pedophilia and bestiality are not one of them. And as someone who's been...
You just told me to be educated on it, and it sounds like you're not fully educated on it.
So, yes.
She gave me four more letters behind that.
I will... Okay, so I personally add the word plus, which I think is having to do with binary and things that I am myself...
I'm making it easy.
So you just leave it at that. If you go LGBTQ+, then you're good. And I swear to you, you're not included. There is no bestiality. As an animal rights activist and a victim of sexual abuse, there is no pedophilia. There is no bestiality. I can swear to you on my life, those two, that's true. Because I'm an animal rights activist. I would not be okay with it if there was bestiality anywhere in any of this.
That's how I feel. So that's where the LMNOP came in. And the thing is, the plus is dangerous. The plus is fucking dangerous. I'm telling you, you'll have some other communities that will try to fill in underneath that plus. No. Define what your letters are so I can stand behind that.
Okay,
but those are changing, don't squeeze in that other shit and add in pedophilia or some shit. Then I'm like,
I'm telling you, Raw, you gotta hear me. There is no, this is where the LGBTQ community has been poisoned by people who are against that. That kind of sexual orientation has been shunned primarily by the religious sect of our country that believes the Bible said no, you know, no sexual relationships between men and women, or sorry, men and men, women and women. That's where that stemmed from. So people who are so fearful of that idea of homosexuality, they poison the well by going, oh, and by the way, they fuck animals. And by the way, they fuck children. It is not true. It is not true, just as much as women aren't witches and Black people aren't criminals. These are ways that people who are bigoted are trying to poison the plight of that marginalized group.
I totally get that. Now, here. Now, see, here, this is what's important. What's important is that we find the middle ground. We find a middle ground. One side can't say, hey, we're right. And the other side says, hey, we're right. And you say, well, no, you just argue. You just end up having this arm wrestle. No. The way you turn this arm wrestle into a handshake is by deciding, is by you coming forward some and me coming forward some and saying, okay, I can live with this. So what I can tell you is this. As the straight guy, who, by the way, loves bisexual women because I'm a fucking threesome guy. Anybody, I don't hide that shit. Yes, that's me.
They're a lot of fun. I have personal experience with the bisexual women, and they are a lot of fun.
I have a lot of fun. Yes, that is. I'm absolutely A-okay with that. So just to be clear, as adults, be who you want to be. I absolutely agree that everyone should have their own right for the most part. Be careful with the everyone. That's like the plus. You got to define that plus. I would say the middle ground is drop the fucking plus. Because other people may try to put in their agendas, and then you have those extremists, those religious extremists that will pull that same bullshit that they pull on us and say, oh, the plus stands for pedophile, the plus stands for bestiality. And me, the guy who don't know shit about it, and I don't really care, I feel like everybody should just have their own rights, except when we start getting into the perverse shit. The middle ground is drop the fucking plus. I'm telling you, that's going to throw us off. You're never going to convince us differently because the fucking religious extremists are going to do that every time.
Right.
They're going to inject their poison into the plot.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
I do hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. But I think as an intelligent, compassionate, educated man that you are, I think the responsible way to...
Because you already told me that you think. You said you think it has to do with... You think that it was more a lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans. And you said you think the plus had to do with other things, but you don't even know.
Because from my understanding,
you're involved in the community.
But here's why. Let me tell you. It is a concept that is continuously evolving. And that is why how I have learned
there's
it
a problem.
Is...
Problem. You see the problem? You see the problem? Listen to the...
No, because
the
there's never down. Pedophilia in there. That's never a thing, and neither is bestiality. That's never been a thing. And here's the thing, just as much... Okay. Let me tell you this.
Can back you to, guarantee
Yes! Lacey, can you 100%! 1,000 million,
gazillion
percent. If
you got an LGBT community that absolutely stamps the anti-pedophile, anti-bestiality
weird
shit, then I guarantee you everybody Black will back you up. We'll be like, okay, cool.
That's great.
Their own sexuality and keep it away from the kids. Let the kids be kids.
Let me tell you something. This might make you feel better. In the music industry, in the rock music industry, we have a problem with pedophilia in that a lot of these adult male rock stars are taking underage girls who come to their shows and manipulating them into sex, as evident by there is a band called Ministry that it was one of my favorite bands growing up. They hired a hired gun guitar player who I toured with, and I found out he was having sex with 15-year-old girls, and he was in his 30s and 40s. And I had a bunch of girls come to me and talk about this with me and tell me that he took advantage of them when they were underage. And I exposed him. And Billboard magazine just did an 11-month investigation into this guy and all of his victims. And sure enough, that is what that's what he does. Yeah. He is a fucking pedophile. So my point being is, I am so against that shit, and I'm an animal rights activist. I would never, ever, ever stand behind a group that promote, and they just don't, Rod. They just don't. And here's the thing: you also have to. I compare it to the plight of other marginalized groups. with in the community of people of color, there was a period of time where they referred to, like the NAACP, they were referred to as Negroes. Then they were referred to as Black people, people of color. And so for me, sitting over here as a white girl, I'm like, I don't know why the word changes when it does. I don't know. I'm sure there is a legitimate reason, but it's not on me to judge whether people want to be called people of color, whether we want to be called Black. That's not my choice. I have to, if I want to be a good citizen of my community of humans, I listen, I go, what is the title that I refer to you as out of respect? I hear what they tell me and I oblige. I go, okay, it's not for me to argue with you what you're being called.
Okay, it's not the same. I understand what you're saying, but my dear, it's not the same. What you're saying is the vernacular on what I'm calling Black. Black, Negro, my nigga, whatever the fuck else we got out there. That's not the same as you adding an acronym to a title. That's not the same, because what happens is my Black doesn't change. We can call it Negro, we can call it Black, we can call it African American, we can call it Black American. Doesn't matter what you call it. I'm still a Black man. I don't care what the fuck you call it. At the end of the day, my biological definition doesn't change, right? I am who I am. I'm not expanding. Now, if I was expanding, if I was able to clone myself and now make a female version, expand myself and make a trans version, I don't know, expand myself and make a whatever the fuck ever version.
All it is is inclusivity. That's the only thing that plus sign, LGBTQ plus, the only thing that plus signifies is inclusivity. It does not mean include criminals. But it's not.
Listen to me. I understand what you're saying. I totally get it. 100%. I'm speaking from the mind. I am a guy. I'm a man. I'm a straight Black male who's all about lesbians, all about bisexuals, because I love them. They're amazing. Why wouldn't I? Gay dudes, do your thing. I don't get it. But I love gay women. So that's what's up. Who lives in Dallas, Texas. And I'm telling you, from this perspective here, and I've lived it. I grew up in Miami, Florida. I was born in New York. I lived in L.A. 10 years. I'm telling you, I'm in Dallas, Texas now. And I'm telling you, I've seen enough perspective. I've been intelligent my entire life. I'm telling you, the part where the heterosexual male lands is one, we completely agree with you when it comes to, it's again, it comes back to an earlier conversation when we talked about compassion, the camp of compassion, the camp of intellect. We both land on the same page, in the same place. Protect children. If you touch a child, torture this motherfucker on public television, on pay-per-view.
Well, fuck then you him. Should be going after straight people. You got to go after straight people because it's the straight people that are doing all the touching. I mean, look at Harvey Weinstein. Well, I guess that's not a child situation. Look at the guy with the gymnastics girls. That was a huge scandal.
I totally agree.
The majority, these are straight people that are doing this shit, not the gay people.
I completely agree. Now, see, in this. And so, to your earlier point, you're talking about the priest. The priest, the reason why the priests were touching boys is because the boys were easily accessible, right? That was your point, that they were easily accessible. Maybe the same case. This ends up being the same case. You're bringing up one guy who was a gymnastics teacher who was touching a bunch of women. We have no argument here. There's no disagreement here. We are on the same accord. In this case, he's a pedophile. I don't care. I don't give a shit if you're touching boys or if you're touching girls. Protect the children. Murder this motherfucker. Don't murder him. Justifiably kill him and torture his ass on paper.
Right, but that's not a gay straight agenda. That's not a gay thing. That's not a straight thing. These are fucking monsters.
I completely agree. Now, again, going back to the plus, I'm telling you from this perspective, the problem with the plus is that it says infinite. Infinite inclusion.
But infinite on who do you love or who are you sexually attracted to, not breaking the law and creating victims. It's not about victimizing. It's solely about who do you love or what sexual. Some people are just only into just self, you know? And some people go both ways. So it's, they don't.
Let me give you the beauty of this conversation. The beauty of this conversation, what you're talking to. You happen to be talking to a user experience architect and designer. It's what I do for a living, user experience. And what I'm telling you, for those that speak this language, is LGBT plus, the plus, is a bad user experience because it is too broad a term. And I understand that what you're trying to do is deliver to me what that term, what that plus means, but you're better off putting a heart at the end than a plus at the end. You feel me? If you did that, that's a better user experience. I can get behind that all the
but
time.
But to I'm demonize like, you know, the whole, love, the whole group, you know, I started this out by saying that it's our responsibility as you know, good citizens of the world to not put out toxic rhetoric, to put out rhetoric and a narrative that is inclusive and says everybody deserves fair treatment.
I agree to a certain extent. Where we disagree is that here's the thing. All of us have lives. Come on. I can't expect that you have delved into all the black psychology, all the black history, all the many narratives that people, I can't expect that you have done that because you have a job, you have four amazing dogs, you have a fantastic husband, you have your own podcast, you got a life. So it's up to me, knowing that the average person has a life, knowing that that is the truth of the matter, right? Knowing that I can respect that, I then have to give you something succinct, a succinct statement, a succinct word, a succinct vernacular, a succinct acronym that says, that delivers to you immediately what my intentions are so that you don't have to seek understanding. You don't have to do all the research. You immediately get it.
But the intentions are not ill will. They're not, you know, as I said, this would be the equivalent of a racist white person going, well, black people commit more crimes, so therefore they're all criminals. I mean, you can't generalize a group of people into being something negative, you know, and that's where we don't disagree there at all.
So just so you understand, we agree. The only thing we've disagreed on thus far is the plus. That's it.
Okay.
If you lose the plus and put a heart, I'm like, that's right, LGBT, damn right. I'll rock a rainbow shirt and go to parade with you. It's no big deal to me. I think every adult should absolutely have their right to be who the fuck they want to be. It's your private life. Why do I even know who you fucking, bro? Why you care who I'm fucking? Get out of my bedroom, bitch. That's how I feel about it. I have no problem with that. But to that point, you and I do not disagree at all. LGBT, I get. It's the other vernacular. It's the other acronym that my homegirl told me. I'll have to have her. I'm gonna contact her. I'm gonna have her send me the whole thing so I can send it to you and you can see what she was talking about. So I was like, wait, what? And they're trying to add in pedophilia. If I was lesbian, gay, bisexual, tranny, I'd be pissed. I wouldn't want no fucking rapist ass pedophile in those letters with me. That's some bullshit. So that's where I'm coming from with that. But LGBT, I totally get it. And the T part is another part that I would love to understand the real, because I've heard different conversations. Like, I have a couple friends who are bisexual. They're definitely bisexual, but they're under, you know, they don't want it all public like that. So I understand their positions, and I've had conversations with them, and they have a very different take. And I wonder what that conversation looks like with lesbian women, bisexual men and women, and gay men. I wonder the truth of how they actually feel about the cousin trannies.
Well, you're not supposed to say trannies, but I gotta, we could go on for hours and hours. Raw, you get a big giant X on that. It was going so smoothly.
I just learned this 5 minutes ago that it's trans.
I appreciate your open-mindedness. I can see that you are making efforts, and I appreciate it. And listen, I don't know everything. I'm not fucking perfect. Not by a landslide am I fucking perfect, but I am continuously trying to listen, learn, and do the right thing and treat everybody well. So on that note, I had a great time talking with you, Ra. You're so much fun, and I love how opinionated and outspoken you are. And I think we could keep this going. We barely even got into any of the reality shows, but that's okay, because I think this was all important stuff that we talked about. So thank you for sitting down and talking with me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been great conversations. It's always fun. I always appreciate intellectual conversations versus the random bullshit that I deal with every day.
I'm right there with you. I completely agree. So thank you again, and you take care, and I'm sure I'll talk to you again soon.
You're welcome. Have a good night. And happy birthday.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Have a good one. Okay. Well, that was definitely an interesting, eye-opening conversation. I have to say, this is one thing that I have been, over the years, fine-tuning in myself as somebody who considers herself to be an activist. And that is how hard to go after people who disagree with you. That's been a big challenge for me. You know, when I was back in my 20s, with the animal rights stuff, I would scream in people's faces. I would call them names, you know, if they disagreed with me about, you know, the way animals should be treated or not, or if should they be used in research or not, or whatever. It would get me so heated and so upset that I would end up screaming at people and calling them monsters and that sort of thing, animal abusers. And what I learned is over time that that is not the way to get people to open up. That's not the way to get people to evolve. And as much as you may feel like screaming at somebody, you're not going to get your message across that way. And so this is kind of, I'm still in a learning curve with this, finding the balance, because of course I want to stand up for my own personal beliefs and what I think is right, what I think is wrong. And, you know, of course, if somebody has like overt, blatant racism or overt, blatant, you know, misogyny or homophobia or whatever, of course, like there's really nothing you can do with that. But if I see a person where I think like, okay, I'm kind of all about recruiting. So how do you recruit? You do it by being open-minded, treating them with respect, treating them with compassion, exchanging ideas, listening to them. Because listen, I think I got it right all the time, but I maybe don't have it right all the time. So I can't sit there and go like, I know that everything I say and spout is going to be right and everything they say is going to be wrong. I need to give them the benefit of the doubt. I need to hear what they have to say, share ideas. And getting people over to your quote unquote side is, it's a massaging effort. You know, it's a slow process, unfortunately. And of course, there's like a lot of room for frustration there. But my whole thing of having being outspoken is ultimately two things. To stand up for and or speak out against any kind of injustices. But secondarily, as I said, to recruit. So, you know, the whole thing with like we attract more flies with honey than with vinegar is sort of applicable to this. And so it's all about massaging that and going like, listen, this is the right way to go. This is the path. This is the way to evolve so that we all are respecting each other and taking care of each other and so that we ourselves can grow. So, you know, it's always a work in progress, and it's challenging when people say things or do things or think things that you fundamentally disagree with. But as I said, it's all about getting them so that they feel safe and listening to you as well. And if you attack them, if you hit them over the head with your ideology and your belief systems and your philosophies and you punch them in the face with it, they're just going to shut down and go, you can go fuck yourself. And as soon as somebody says that to me, then I've lost them. So I don't want to lose people by punching them in the head with my ideas about life. I would rather go, look, I'm open over here. I'm accepting. I'm welcoming. Come see what I'm all about. Let me teach you the things that I know. I'll try to learn from you as well. Let me show you this path here that I think is the path on the way to compassion. So, and treating everybody fairly. So there you have it. So anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed that. It was definitely an interesting conversation. A day after my interview with Buddha, he sent me a text message. In it, he wrote, I literally had a conversation with some guy friends today and corrected their terminology to trans, like me, they didn't know. Using your exact analogy, it's like calling black people Negroes, antiquated and offensive enough, hashtag progress. I responded to him by saying, oh yeah, I love that. Thank you for sharing this with me. To that, Buddha replied, have a great week. I look forward to hearing your podcast. Thanks for the invite. The only way to progress is to converse. I then wrote, agreed, I love it. And I'm still always learning too. Buddha responded by saying, we all are. It really takes a conscious effort to stay intellectually fluid. This was a powerful moment for me, and it teaches me two things. One, we are all human and none of us are perfect. Two, when dealing with people on a one-on-one basis, we will never be able to hear each other's different perspectives if we are yelling, shaming, and name-calling. In this interview, I challenged myself to communicate with patience, and Buddha rewarded me with understanding. This truly was an amazing moment, and I just felt it was important to share this with all of you. To switch gears for a minute, speaking of activism, the environment is something that really matters to me a lot, and I have been endorsed by this new company that I'm very excited about. It's not a new company, but it's new to me, Liquid Death. It's water in an aluminum can that takes plastic out of the environment. I did talk about this a little bit on the previous week's podcast. So if you missed it, please look at the first 5 minutes of that where I talk about how devastating plastic is to the environment, which is why Liquid Death rocks, because they don't use plastic. They use aluminum cans. It's very, very good tasting water. It's delicious. I love their whole like marketing thing. It's just so cool and totally up my alley. So please, if you support me, if you support the podcast, if you want to keep plastic out of the environment, and if you drink water, please go to liquiddeath.com and purchase some water. They have still and sparkling, and you can get 10% off by using the promo code TALKOFLOVE and get yourself some Liquid Death water. So thank you guys so much. I really appreciate you all. And if you like this podcast, make sure to hit the subscribe button on YouTube and be sure to hit the thumbs up if you like what you hear and see. And come find me on my website, www.talkoflove.net. If you click the contribute button and you become a Talk of Love contributor, then you can sign up for all kinds of rewards like Skype chats with me. You can buy merch. You can get personalized shout out videos for yourself. You can watch the Rock of Love and Charm School reaction videos that I do that I send out to you guys every week. But you got to be a contributor first to get all of those rewards. So thank you guys so much. I love you all. You guys rock. And I will see you next time. And in the meantime, don't threaten me with a good time. Bye, guys.